I am excited to bring to you today's interview with Nagin Yazdowney, and she is an amazing lawyer and comedian. So when I told my son, Zach, that I'm going to interview Nagin, I said she is a counsel. She's a lawyer for Nintendo. Oh, he was all excited. He goes, Dad, why can't you get a real job like Nagin has? Well, I guess it would be nice, especially come Christmas time, if on my way out the office, I can stop by the store on the way out and pick up a couple Nintendo Switch games. I don't know, but nonetheless, Nagin is also a hilarious comedian. And so before we get into the interview, let's just listen to a little bit of her comedy, which I really resonate with because she is talking about merging into traffic. Oh, one of my pet peeves. So without further ado, here is Nagin.
And you guys have the nicest people. Like, LA is home to the nicest people in the world, except when you're behind a wheel. Like, nobody lets you merge left. What is that here? It's impossible. Even if there's no one anywhere near you, if you dare signal that you're turning left, merging left, someone like 200 feet behind you just speeds up, like, over my dead body, you're getting in this lane. And even if you make contact with them, if you like make eye contact, like, let me go in, they still are like, they just think you're asking them for help moving or like for a ride to the airport. They just head down, ignore you. And I'm like, who is in the left lane? Like, what kind of people are these? And I think it's the same people who go to potlucks and don't bring anything but eat everyone's food. And like bring Tupperware for the leftovers, you know what I'm talking about? Or like your vegan friend who yells at you every time you eat a hot dog when it's none of his business. Sam, thank you for coming. And one time I actually tried to get in the left lane, and that was a big mistake because I got in and I got hit. I'd never been in an accident before, so I didn't know what information to ask for, what documents do I get. So I grabbed my phone to call my boyfriend, and then I remembered I don't have a boyfriend. It's like, thanks for that reminder, universe. Cool. And then I get out to see the damage, and he hit me on the left side above my back tire. But a week before that, I was getting out of a parking spot, and I hit my car above the back tire. So I was like, cool, he's going to pay for that. And then I realized that was on the other side, so now my car just has dimples. And I always wanted dimples, but just like that time that I cast my ballot hoping to make American history, you have to be really specific for what you wish for. Those of you laughing are really smart. That was a smart joke. So anyway, I'm really proud of my battle dance because it tells other drivers this girl is serious about merging at all costs. Plus, I got a number out of it. Me and Robert Accident have been texting a lot. He says he wants my insurance information, but I think it's gonna lead to something more.
Well, I am especially excited to introduce today's guest because I feel like we see the world the same way. You see, she is a really funny comedian and a lawyer, and I, too, am a lawyer. So we have a lot in common. Well, welcome, I can't say it. I'll say Nagin Yazdowney. How do you pronounce your name? Please tell me. Help me out.
Close. My name is Nagin.
Nagin.
Which rhymes, I like to tell people that it's like legging or begging, you know, it rhymes with those words. So it's like begging for negging, if that helps you.
That does. Negging, begging for negging. You know, my co-host on the podcast, we do a long form podcast every weekend on Debriefing the Law. Her name is Mackenzie Smith. She's a lawyer out of Philadelphia. And I could not pronounce our new vice president's name, Kamala. Is that Kamala Harris? And she said she heard someone describe it this way, Mamala. It rhymes with Mamala. And so it's Kamala. So I go, hey, you know what? Now I can say it correctly, at least when I think of that. But nonetheless, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed today. Right off the top, though, I want to get a couple things just squared away. because some people, when they listen to this, whenever they listen to it, are going to want to know how they can follow you. They're going to say, wow, she is a really funny person, and she does stand-up comedy. How can I find her? Now, we're going to have it in our show notes as well, but go ahead and tell our listeners how people can follow you if they want to.
Okay. I would love some followers and some likes if you want to follow me, but my Instagram is at Negzi, N like Nancy, E-G-S-I, and I have a Twitter that I'm sort of on.
Right, right.
At Negi Nina. So. All right.
Yeah, I agree with Twitter. I am always asking how Twitter works, and I made my first post on Twitter, and I bragged about it on Facebook, and someone, Tom Hunger, actually called me to task. He is a lawyer who's argued over 25 cases of the U.S. Supreme Court. He says, Joel, I don't really think it's called posting when it comes to Twitter. So I think you just kind of expose yourself as being a fraud. And I guess, yeah, it's a tweet. It's a tweet. I get that. Okay. But I don't know how to use Twitter. But that's why you have marketing people. But nonetheless, that's how people can get a hold of you. And you are an extremely funny person. And we're going to get to that here in a little bit. I listened to your stand-up routine, and it was hilarious. I have a lot of questions.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it was great. I have a lot of questions on how you came up with that. But first, I want to just kind of cover some of the basics here, because you are living the dream life as a lawyer. So for you non-lawyer listeners, let me just explain how this works. In law school, everyone dreams of one day being in-house counsel. We're like, oh, man, if I play my cards right, one day I could be corporate counsel. And you actually have been a corporate counsel for a couple different corporations. How did you do that? How is life living the dream?
Isn't it funny when you're in law school, like the dream is to work at one of these big firms,
right?
And then you get there and you're just miserable. So that was why I decided to go in-house sort of early, because I was at a firm and thought, wow, this is not what I expected.
Yes.
And
did you have a moment?
Yeah, I had a moment. I was like, I just felt that I was in my office so often by myself.
Right.
With very little human interaction.
Yes.
And was like, I would rather be at a different, you know, kind of different industry. The legal world is tough. I think it's very traditional. But these in-house positions are new and exciting, and you get to sit in the same room as your clients.
Right.
And so, yeah, I thought, okay, if I'm going to stay in law, I gotta be a little bit more social. I gotta be around my clients a little bit more and have a little bit more of an opportunity to be myself. Because I think in those traditional law firms, you're kind of having to be what I think you're supposed to be in those law firms.
Oh, it's miserable.
It is. I couldn't imagine being there for too much longer than I was.
I know. I exactly know what you're talking about. That's why I said, did you have a moment? I had two moments.
Yeah,
one of them was,
you did.
I was in the basement. They sent me to the basement, and there were like banker boxes of documents all throughout. I mean, it was like carpeted wall to wall with banker boxes. They said, Joel, go look for the smoking gun. It's like, I have no idea what I'm looking for. I'm just thumbing through these documents going, whatever, zoned out. And then I was a little bit later in front of my computer writing some memo for some trash company excusing their pollution of the world. And I'm thinking, my life has to mean more than this. I got to get out. This is just miserable. And so, you got out. So that's great news. And
yeah.
Now, you work right now for Nintendo. Now, do you play video? I got to ask, do you play video games?
I'm not a huge gamer right now. But when I was growing up, one of the reasons that I was attracted to Nintendo was because growing up, I loved playing Donkey Kong. Like, my sisters and I, constantly play, to the point where when I play it now, because I have Donkey Kong Country now on my Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
I can close my eyes and win.
Really?
Because I, Yeah, I mean, I just know all the cues and the music, and I remember everything because we played so often.
So wait a second. As corporate lawyer, do you have some of the secrets on how to break that game? I'm not sure that's actually fair.
No.
Okay.
I have no secrets.
No cheat codes.
And I'm actually extremely bad at video games.
All right.
Don't ask me.
But I'm like you. When it comes to video games, it's like Donkey Kong. It really does not get better than Donkey Kong, Frogger, and Pac-Man. That's what I still remember. My boys play video games. And those dang things never end. I mean, they play nonstop. Oh, it's maddening.
Yeah. It's different now.
So for you, if it's like Christmas time and I don't know if you have nieces and nephews, whatever, but let's say you're buying a gift for someone, are you able to like leave the office early and just stop off at, you know, research and development and pick up a new game? Is that how it works there at Nintendo?
So I've only been there about four months now.
Okay.
And I've never been in the office because of COVID.
Wow.
But
interesting.
I think you can get games and stuff for a little bit of a discount as an employee, but not a huge thing.
That would be my son's dream. So I did have to actually.
But I have heard you can borrow them from the office.
Really?
Yeah, people go and borrow games.
That's going to be my son's dream job. I mean, work for Nintendo, free games. I mean, your boss comes in, what are you doing? Well, I'm playing games. Okay, well, that's just research. You're just actually, you know, product development. It's all good. You're just researching your trademark or I don't know. All right, well, are you on your way to CEO?
I'm not sure about that one.
Well, so here's what I want to know, right? If you are in normal law practice, you have your clients out there, right? And this is why I'm so fascinated by corporate law. So I'd be curious what your thoughts are on this. But, you know, as lawyers, we know, okay, there is a right legal strategy. So we advise our clients how to take a certain course to avoid legal trouble, right? We want to avoid collision with the law. But as a business person, the object is to make money, which sometimes those roads collide, right? I mean, and for you, your client, you're advising them of the law, but it's also a business, which has maybe a slightly different objective. One time I got a call from a potential client, and it was a DJ. And I'm changing the facts a little bit to protect the innocent, but this person wanted me to write a waiver for them, a contract to waive liability for a DJ business. Now I thought, you know what, I could probably write a 100-page document that could waive any potential liability. I got my creative hat on. I thought, well, you know, what if someone pulls a Michael Jackson move there on the dance floor, pulls a hamstring? We need to probably cover that, waive that. or what if someone plays a My Heart Will Go On from Titanic? By the way, I had to ask somebody for a name of a romantic song, and that's what my wife Wendy told me. Use My Heart Will Go On from Titanic. And let's say two people kiss who otherwise wouldn't kiss unless they had, drank each other pretty. Yeah, is that something that should be accounted for in some kind of waiver? I guess my point here is there's conflict there. I mean, how does a corporate lawyer navigate that conflict between business strategy and legal strategy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on the situation. And I think part of it is like, you know, we'll make sure that we're not breaking any laws.
That's always right. That's good.
But everything else we can get kind of squishy and creative on. And like you said, we're trying to make money and we're trying to creatively run the business. So it's about sometimes getting just creative and not being as conservative as you might be at a law firm. Just
thinking
outside the box.
So I can imagine
about how you can accomplish.
I can imagine covering yourself with some kind of legal disclaimer, like, well, okay, this is what is the safest route to take, but there's another route that maybe the 10% exposure to some bad things happening, maybe 20% exposure. Where's your comfort level? I'm not sure how all that plays out, but all right, well, maybe one day. Now, I actually am a corporate lawyer as well. But it's my own corporation, which is all of three people. So I'm not sure exactly the same thing that you have. But nonetheless, I'm always fascinated to hear stories of how lawyers got to where they are. So just tell me, when you were young, is that what you dreamed to be? You wanted to be a lawyer? Just walk me through a little bit of that process on how you got to where you are today.
I think actually when I was younger, I kind of wanted to be whatever I saw in front of me. So if it was like, I went to McDonald's, I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
This looks right. And then it became like, I want to be a teacher. For a long time, I wanted to be a teacher because, you know, you're in school.
Right.
And that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And then I like, you know, taught Sunday school classes or whatever with kids. And I was like, I'm not a patient person. I'm learning this is a very difficult job. Like, hats off to teachers, especially during COVID.
Right.
Just gotta shout them out right now. But that didn't end up being the right fit for me. But what people kept telling me, I guess I was like, I always liked to be right in my arguments, and sometimes I had creative arguments. So people were like, you should think about being a lawyer.
Is that a good thing? I'm just thinking about that. When someone says to you, you know what, you would make a really good lawyer. What are they really telling you?
I thought at the time it was a good thing. I like to think it is. I also really like to negotiate. I'm Persian.
Okay.
As you might know from my name. And so it's just in my blood to negotiate.
Okay.
Outside of law or inside of law. So that was always something that did interest me and was just natural to me. And so it seemed like a decent fit. I watched a lot of like law shows, like Law and Order. And I was I think like that could be interesting.
Right.
And maybe I can also, you know, have an impact on the world doing something within the law. And so I decided to try it out. I took the LSAT. I liked the game section a lot.
Yes. I forgot like, about I, the game I, section.
Yeah, it's weird, but I like had fun during that part. Like that was like doing a crossword puzzle or something.
Right,
I was like, oh, cool.
Oh, my oldest son is thinking about law school. And so I want him to take that LSAT. It's like, yeah, it's actually a lot of fun to prepare and to play those games. I forgot about the game section. But maybe I got to actually attend some of these study prep sessions if he does take the LSAT. And so you thought about being a lawyer, but then you took the LSAT. So you went to college and you had an open mind then when you went to college.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I actually thought I'd still be a teacher. And then I think I applied for Teach for America or something. That was my first choice thing and didn't get it.
Really?
And so, yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe. And then, I mean, I was teaching these kids, got rejected for Teach for America. And I was like, maybe the world is trying to tell me something. So I ended up taking the LSAT and decided to apply for law school. And you know, actually thought I was going to go into criminal law. You know,
now, why
law
is that?
SVU, all this stuff.
Okay.
I guess it was just like what I was seeing in front of me. I didn't know any better. I mean, I thought this is a good way to make a difference. And then I did do summer at a DA's office.
All right.
And just realized this is really hard. Like, I actually, I'm not even kidding. I threw up after one of my court appearances. I was so nervous.
Okay.
I think the judge was just like, she kept asking questions that I didn't know the answer to something. And I just was like, this is too much for me. And like had to leave the room.
But does that make
that
you?
That was how.
Doesn't that make you feel alive being in court? I mean,
No.
Now, wait a second here. So this is what I have told people. I have argued in front of many different circuit courts. I've argued in front of Judge Calabresi of the Second Circuit. And I tell them nothing pales in comparison to the nerves that I felt trying to make a room full of drunk college kids laugh at stand-up night at the local comedy club. That's real nerves. And I've seen you do stand-up comedy. You are natural. So I would think that court would be nothing for you.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. Stand-up comedy is really hard too. I think people that do stand-up comedy make it look so easy, and people that go up in court and talk to the. Oh, thank you. But it does. It does take a lot of practice, and it does take a lot of nerves. I remember the first time I ever did stand-up comedy. I think I blacked out while I was on stage. I don't even know what happened.
Right.
This weird experience. But yeah. I did end up after that day, my dad, who is not a lawyer, took me to a mediation that he was part of.
All right.
And I watched his attorney negotiate and teach, like explain what was going on and then negotiate this this case. And while I was watching him, I was like, my Persian blood was like boiling and like moving inside. And I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do.
This is you.
Like, I just felt it.
This is my calling.
Yeah, I was like, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
And after that, I went and got, you know, took all the negotiation classes I could at school. I got like the highest grade. I remember I would never prepare, don't tell my professor, but I would never prepare for the negotiation classes. And it, like, would just come out of my mouth. And I was like, oh, like I just,
right.
I would win the negotiations. It was just, you know, it just made sense to me. So after that, I decided like, I gotta do some sort of, my career has to be incorporating negotiation, and ended up in-house. I mean, I was, you know, part of a firm for a few years, but it does come in handy now in-house. I negotiate contracts all the time. And
you could have been a used car salesman, but you decided to go law. I get it. Yeah. You want to be a negotiator. So it makes sense. By the way, I did hear this. I don't know if you've heard this. You know what the three lowest respected professions are?
Is ours one of them?
Lawyer. Insurance agent and car salesman. And when I was in college, I sold cars to Frank Ancona Honda. I graduated. I sold insurance for Country Companies Insurance. And now I'm a lawyer. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel. And then I'll joke.
Dear.
What's next? I don't know. Maybe politics could be next. I have no idea. But
I
tell people in my class that, because we had this class called Lying in the Law, or Lessons in Honesty from Honest Abe, and we cover lying in the legal practice, where it comes in and where it's most prevalent. And I found this quote from a professor, J.J. White, from the University of Michigan. And this is what he said. I'm going to paraphrase, because I don't have the quote in front of me. But he said, negotiation is the act of deception. When you are engaged in negotiation, you are trying to convince the other person that their case is not as strong as it really is, and you're trying to convince them that your case is actually stronger than it is. It's an active negotiator, or an experienced negotiator is in the act of deception. What do you think about that? Is Professor White off or on?
I mean, I think that can be true. And I think that's not, I mean, that is a type of negotiation that I could be good at. But I think what makes me more comfortable and what makes it a more interesting practice is when, for example, you're doing it in-house, because the way that lawyers negotiate when they're working for an in-house company usually is in a way that also builds up a relationship. And so you're not necessarily trying to trick anybody. You're doing the best you can for your company, but you understand that you're going to have to compromise so that you can build a relationship and maintain the relationship. It's a lot more friendly.
Are you even referring to negotiation within the corporation? So different departments within the same company? Or are you talking about negotiating with firms outside of the company, those that you contract with? Or is it a little bit of both?
Maybe both, but I was referring mainly to agreements that we put together with other parties. Yeah.
All right. So you go to law school and you really decide negotiation. You're just drawn to it. Your heart's pumping. You feel alive in that. And so how did you go about getting a job being a negotiator? Or did you just kind of let the world happen and you just kind of moved towards that end?
Yeah, I mean, when you're starting out, I'm sure a lot of people feel this way. You don't have a lot of options. You kind of just take what you can get. And so that's kind of how I started. I applied for a million jobs, didn't really care,
right.
You know, what it was.
What a paycheck. Oh, yeah, I want a paycheck. Just give me a W-2. I'm happy. Right.
Yes. And when I was graduating, too, it was really hard to find jobs. I think there was some sort of recession sort of thing in 2012 where a lot of us were having a lot of trouble getting jobs. And even people who summered at a place before were like losing their positions. And so it was just kind of take what you can get, which is kind of what I did. I spent a couple years at a firm. I even did like a 3-month stint at a trademark company, which was actually a lot of fun. And so, you know, did what I had to do until I got in house, and I was contacted by somebody on LinkedIn and
ended LinkedIn. Up interviewing from,
yes, that's a really good place to have a profile, because recruiters are really good at finding people on there. Even if you don't have a ton of experience, you know, I was in litigation and somebody contacted me and said, would you be interested in this in-house position in a tech company?
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. transaction work.
That is good to know. So someone found you on LinkedIn, and that's how you got your job with the tech companies.
Yes.
All right. That is...
I'm still in touch with that recruiter to this day. But yeah, and so, and then from there, after a couple of years in-house, I think you develop a little bit more experience. You have a little bit more of a, you know, resume. You've got the skills. And so after that, I started to really want to be picky about where I was going. And I was like, I had a list of things that I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, sitting with the clients. I didn't want an office. I wanted a short commute. I wanted a certain amount of money. Right. And I wanted really to be part of a company where I believed in their mission. And I felt like their principles were good. They had good values. And so I found, you know, that's how I found Virgin Orbit, which I'm so proud to have worked with them. I'm still following them and still in touch with all of their, all of my old coworkers. They were really like a family to me. And, so that was a really cool company. They wanted to open up space for everyone. And then when the time was right, I found Nintendo, and Nintendo was really exciting to me because not just because of like how much joy they brought to my life and my sister's lives when we were younger playing. Every time you think of Nintendo, you just, it's happiness, right?
Christmas time.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I really loved that their motto is make people smile.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I was like, I would love to be part of a team and a company that wants to make people happy and wants to make people smile. And that's like all they do. It's really something that's part of the company, and it's such a great group.
I resonate with that, especially because that's why I started up this business called Comedian of Law, because, you know, I've been a lawyer, is 20 years out, and I really was drawn to public speaking and comedy. And I thought, man, there's a way. These CLEs are dreadfully boring. I mean, they're just like, you know, snooze fest. If there's a way to actually make it interesting so people actually stay awake through that might be a plus. And so I kind of just went down that path. And so I like what you're saying about Nintendo. But it also seems to be consistent with your overall life's model, at least as I can tell, because in watching your comedy clip, I mean, you are really funny. So how do you merge your desire to be funny, a stand-up comic, with your legal practice? I mean, are those two things just separate in your life, or do you see some common ground between the two?
First of all, I just want to say I think that's really cool that you're doing CLEs. In a funny way. I would love to watch all your CLEs. But anyways,
it is a blast.
I think that's genius.
Wake up every day just thanking God that the bills are still paid. It's like, really, they pay me to do this? This is just an amazing that I actually can. It's like,
well, I mean, you did. Yeah, you did it. You found the exact, you know, area, the part where you could be funny and combine the law with that. And I think that is so genius, and no one's thought of that. So that's really cool.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I think in my practice, it's more, comedy is more of a side thing. It's like, I can do that on the side, but what does help a little bit is if you have a good sense of humor about things, that when things are going wrong, instead of being stressed about something, which, you know, I have a hard time with a lot of times, I'll just get stressed and like annoyed and whatever about what's going on. But if you can use humor instead, you can really lighten the mood, and you can lighten your load by making something funny. And so we would do that a lot. I would do that a lot at work. Even when things were stressful, even when like things were annoying, you know, if the parking lot was filled up, I would just be like, I had to take an Uber from the, you know, I don't know. We would just, you know, make fun of the situation instead of complaining about it. And I think that drew my clients to me more. And I think I was an approachable attorney. I think, I mean, everyone in our group was, but, and is, and I think at Nintendo too, if you bring a little bit of a sense of humor, it's easier to engage with you. And I know sometimes lawyers have a bad, rap, and you don't, you know, you go to them and they say no, or like whatever.
Yes.
But I think when you bring a good sense of humor, you can tell a funny story or whatever. It just helps the relationship.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of where it,
We teach this class called Using Humor in Law, where we try to figure out how we can incorporate humor into the legal practice. And will that make you a better lawyer? Will it make you enjoy your job a little better? So I was really drawn to the parts of your site where you talk about how you even taught a class at one of your previous firms on using humor in practice. And yeah, it really does help you, your interactions with other people. I want to throw this statement out there. I want to see what your thoughts are. I know it's a cliche. I get that. But is there something more profound behind the cliche? And that is this. All things being equal, people would rather laugh than not laugh. I mean, we were drawn to humor. We were created in such a way that we crave humor. And so all things being equal, we would rather laugh than not laugh. And so I thought, if that is true, what does that mean about how can we incorporate more laughter into our daily lives? So I guess our lives don't suck as much as what they otherwise would. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And yeah, I did teach a class on this exact thing. And I think it's just a practice. I think it's like, you know, write down the things that, you know, you normally complain about. Like there's no room in the parking lot.
Right.
Or whatever. And what's funny about that though? Like, so one of the things that we would do in my class that I taught was we'd go around and talk about some of the things that were annoying and what was funny about them. And it was a practice. Yeah. So the example of the parking lot being full, I think I maybe even mentioned this earlier, one of our principles or values at Virgin Orbit, where I was when I taught the class, was make space for everyone. So we were joking about how we want to make space for everyone except in the parking lot because we had no spaces. And so stuff like that, or like we had a really flimsy sink, and you know, normally when you go to an office, like the sinks these days are automatic. You just put your hand under it, everything, you know.
Right.
We had this, like, I've never seen a sink like this. Just, it would spray everywhere. It was hard to use. And we were like, we have like the machines that no one else in the world has. Right. Like, number one in the world for making rocket parts. But our sink doesn't work. So, just making fun of the little things that normally would make us angry or piss us off or whatever.
Right.
Finding the funny really just makes everything better. And when you can share that with other people, like you said, everybody's drawn to that. Everybody wants to laugh. People would rather, you know, think of I think people would be interested in hearing the funny parts of the things that are stressing them out and be able to laugh at themselves.
Yeah.
Takes a load.
I give this example of, let's say I were to give you two tickets for this weekend, you know, you can go there. Yeah. I pretty much guarantee you which tickets you're going to take. Either it's going to be to the front row of a Jerry Seinfeld concert or of a funeral. I'm pretty sure you're all going to take the Jerry Seinfeld tickets and not the funeral. I don't care how good that potato salad tastes. No one is going to pick a funeral over Jerry Seinfeld. It borderlines on the cliche, but it's true. We are drawn to laughter. So I'm fascinated by your thought of, let's go around and just, you know, identify these things that generally make us mad, frustrate us, and can we find the humor in it? Now, how did you think, how did you perceive that experiment to play out? Was it positive? Did the things get fixed? Did they change out the sinks? Or did it just help people lighten people's mood as they go about not being annoyed so much?
I don't think anything really got fixed because I think, but the thing was, we just laughed about everything. We just, it was incredible because none of the people in my room had ever performed stand-up comedy. I taught maybe like this class, maybe 5 or 6 times in a couple of years. And not one of the people had ever performed stand-up, but every single person was able to get a laugh and everyone could think of something.
Right.
So it's something that we all can do. Everybody has it in them. And so instead of it being like, oh, we have to fix these little things, it was just like, oh, you know what? That's actually hilarious. And you know, it bonds us because everybody had the same experience. Like there were people talking about how dirty the bathroom was in the men's room or something. And it just
You have no idea.
Yeah. And so it wasn't like I don't think they ever cleaned the men's bathroom up more, but it was just like, now it was something that, or like, oh, I remember that, you know, this person said that.
You should go call Jerry Seinfeld and come over and attend one of your classes. That'd be great material for his show. I mean, do you ever watch Seinfeld?
Yeah, sometimes. Not a huge religious viewer or anything like that.
He was great.
He's very funny.
Oh, at the observational comedy. So he would pick things that normally irritate
Love
you
it.
And then find the funny in it. That would be a perfect. Now, I do like this idea. So I just want to throw this idea by you, Nagin, on stand-up comedy, teaching a class on how to do stand-up comedy, because you've done stand-up comedy. I've done stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. And I know you just kind of mentioned a little bit there in passing, like, you know, they're not really going to go try it. But why not? Wouldn't that be great for corporate America if we had people actually try stand-up comedy and just learn how to do it and then live out the experience?
Yes, I fully think that they should. And I encourage everyone to do it, either a stand-up class or an improv class or something, because, yeah, if you loosen up a little and you tell your jokes and you think of jokes and you make people laugh, I think it doesn't just help the people who are laughing, but it helps you too. Like, it feels good to make other people happy and laugh. Yeah. Like I said, builds relationships, you know, lessens your stress. So yeah, absolutely think that that would be a great idea. At the very least, you should take classes from other people, like CLEs that are funny.
Hey, you know what? That's a great plug. I love that plug right there. Yeah, take our class. We actually tell people you actually can learn how to be funny. There's actually a formula that you can follow. Mm-hmm. Some people are just funny innately. And so for you, how do you go about doing your stand-up bit? And so I kind of missed my segue here a little bit a while ago. We're talking about things that irritate you. And I was going to say, man, here's what really irritates me, driving. I am a different person. Oh, my wife will vouch for that. I am like possessed when I get on the road. And I loved your bit. And with your permission, I'm going to go ahead and play it at the at the beginning here of the podcast. But you did a bit on merging left. Right? Do you remember that joke?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I was like so there with you. I was saying like, preach it. I mean, that is just so dead on. Why is it that we become some other person? I'm like, I feel like I'm auditioning for being a NASCAR driver, and this is like my demo tape I'm going to send to some team. Yeah, watch how I win the race. Why do we turn into animals when it comes to driving?
Seriously.
So how did you come up with that joke? Did you just have that experience? You just wrote it down, or what happened?
Yeah, I kept having that experience. Like, I kept trying to merge left, and people, I swear, would, as soon as they saw me trying to get in there, would speed up.
Why?
And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I think we just, we're selfish drivers. A lot of us. There are very few times people let you in.
Now, I got to ask you,
in my experience,
do you do that?
Yeah, I totally speed up. No, I think so. I probably do. I mean, sometimes I'm nice, but I think oh no, you don't. This is my lane.
I'm going to tell you, my natural tendency is not in my lane. And I don't know why that is. I'm not normally a selfish person. I don't normally like, hey, you can't come in here. I know I'm not getting to my destination a second sooner if I let them over or not.
Right.
But why is it my initial inclination is, you know, heck no, you stay over. You get behind me where you belong. But yeah, we turn into animals on the car.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know. So why we've learned to drive this way.
I just love that joke. So you wrote that joke about merging left. Now, just off the top of your head, how many times have you given that joke? Are we talking like that was your only time and you recorded it, or is that the 1,000th time and you recorded it?
No, I probably said that on stage a few times. Maybe like 5 or 6 times.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know how many times
Seinfeld was asked one time, is like, don't you get tired of your jokes? How come, you know, do you want to write new material? And he said, look, I'm tired of it, but the audience, it's the first time they've heard it. And so, you know, stand-up comics, they do the same joke over and over and over. And so I do these classes, and yeah, now that I've done them 100 times, I'm sick of my own jokes, I gotta tell you. But I still, you know, you gotta give them, because the people on the other side, it might be the first time they've heard it. And so now you are very proficient at it. Every word that you use is chosen, you know, to get a certain response. It was a very hilarious joke. I can't imagine actually living in California. Is traffic as bad as what I think out there in California?
Well, it used to be, yeah, especially in LA. Traffic was horrible.
Like, oh, yeah.
You'd go a few miles in an hour, like 5 miles in an hour in some places.
Oh, my blood
but
is
now
boiling.
That COVID, I know. It was horrible. You could walk there at the same speed, but... But now with COVID, I don't know. I think I haven't actually been in LA for a little while, and I gave up my car a few months ago. So I really don't know.
You gave up your car?
As bad as it was.
Now, why'd you do that?
It was at the end of a lease and, I was like, I'm not going anywhere. So I need to pay this. And it's so much less stressful, honestly. Like every single day when I was driving to work before, it's so many things that can stress you out and make you nervous, and I almost got in an accident here, or this person caught me off.
Right.
And now I'm just like, I get up and I take the long commute to the desk next to my bed, and it's stress free.
Oh, that is so true. Yeah. This life in COVID, it's a different life. I mean, I know it's a cliche, and so you hate to even talk about it in a cliche kind of way, but I'm just wondering, are we ever going to go back? Because now that we've kind of experienced this lifestyle, are we ever going to go back to rush hour traffic? I mean, how much time did we waste just driving to and from the office?
Seriously.
But
yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure there is going back. It definitely has impacted me and my classes because we used to do live classes all the time. Now we do everything over the internet, webinars. And so I just like, now there are some problems. Has this happened to you yet where you've done a webinar or a mediation? And of course, we're only dressed appropriately from the top up, right? No one actually is taking the time. Right. No one's taking the time to actually dress appropriately on the bottom side. And so I had this mediation a couple of weeks ago, and I was like in my nice shirt, but I'm wearing gym shorts on the bottom, right? Just comfortable gym shorts. And so I cross my legs midway through because I want to get a little bit more comfortable. And there on the screen, I see a big old fat naked knee. I'm like, no, I got to take this down now that my secret has been exposed. But nonetheless, hopefully nothing like that at Nintendo. You guys are all appropriately Zoom, have appropriate Zoom attire.
I haven't seen anything. I have heard stories of other people coming out of the shower or whatever
a nightmare.
Oh my gosh. I know somebody, I won't say,
but
there was a very big executive apparently who came out of the shower during one of their meetings and it was on request. Yeah.
Oh.
So you have to be careful. Yes. Not only of the camera, of the mute button, that's a whole thing. Fear of mute off is what I'm hearing is the new FOMO.
Okay. Fear of mute off. That definitely is true. How many times are you pushing that to make sure it's actually triggered it the right amount of times? But all right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I do want to just conclude here with one other thought. My curiosity gets the best of me. What is your favorite legal movie or show? I assume you like to watch legal movies, or are you the kind of person that stays away from legal movies?
Well, I've seen Legally Blonde and a few other legal movies. There was one where there was a jury, runaway jury, maybe?
Yes, right.
Was that the one with Cusack?
Yes, and Hackman.
That's a good one.
Yep.
I think so. Yeah.
But Gene Hackman. My Cousin Vinny, though, doesn't register?
I don't know that I've watched that recently or at all. I can't remember.
No.
I know the movie, but
wait a second. Back up. Pause. All right, we're gonna delete this entire. We're gonna trash this interview. Are you telling me?
So I go watch.
I'm talking to a lawyer who hasn't seen My Cousin Vinny.
Or if I did, I wasn't impressed enough.
No, I'm sorry,
that was so insulting.
You have not seen My Cousin Vinny. All right.
Okay. I must not have seen it.
No. You please. You got to watch it this week, and then at some point in time, I'm gonna reach back out to you and find out what you thought. Because I'm telling you, you're gonna say, Joel, you changed my life. I am never gonna be the same again. Yes, I'm telling you, it is that incredible of a legal movie. I always do this survey on my webinars. What is the best legal movie of all time? I got to tell you, 99%, it's always My Cousin Vinny, and it's not even close. So
should we cut the clip and just say that I said my cousin Vinny.
Hey, no. You've got to come clean here. And okay. I'm going to reach back out to you here in a couple of weeks. Find out okay. if you've watched. Part I'm two. Telling you, you will love this movie. You will love Marissa Tomei. She actually was 23 years old. She won an Academy Award for her portrayal there in My Cousin Vinny. She was hilarious. It is class. It is comedy gold. So many funny parts. Judge Posner from Richard Posner, The Seventh Circuit, said it's one of the best movies for teaching the law. We use it in our CLEs all the time because it's such a good movie to teach from. But now I'm kind of excited to see what you have to say about it. Because I know, you know, you're from the younger generation. My son is from the younger generation. So my son watched it for the first time. And so he texted me. Because, Dad, I just got done watching My Cousin Bunny. Because apparently, whenever you're typing on, you know, Siri changed it to Bunny from Vinny, I guess. I don't know. Because I actually tried.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. So I just watched My Cousin Bunny. Because did you know that Marissa Tomei, who's Vita, or what is her name, Mona Lisa Vito in the movie, is Spider-Man's mom? Is like, you know. To this generation, that's why she's so incredible. She's Spider-Man's mom, and that's she also so happened to be this Academy Award-winning actress from My Cousin Vinny. So, hilarious movie. Are you intrigued at least a little bit about this movie?
Completely. No, good. It's on my list now for sure. I'm looking forward to you reaching out to me and saying, let's do a part two so we can discuss the movie in detail.
Now I'm worried. I am a little bit worried that you are going to say Jolt's a bust. But I'm confident. No. It is that amazing of a movie. And then I want royalties from whoever produced the movie. But
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Have a Merry Christmas and a great holidays. And I guess enjoy COVID out there in West
thank
Coast
you.
Area.
There's lots to enjoy.
Yeah.
There's actually a lot of jokes for COVID. If you want stand-up material, there's a lot of material, original stuff.
Oh, I know. A lot of stuff. We actually, in our household, all got it. And so, except for my oldest son, who's in college, for some reason, he goes off to college, doesn't get it. We all stay home and we get it. And we were very fortunate. It was absolutely nothing for us. Again, we got to be cautious because we know some people it's not nothing, but for us, it really was just nothing at all. I wouldn't have even missed a day of golf from it outside of, I think I took some expired medication at one point in time, but nonetheless, that's it.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and watching
my cousin. It's so good to talk to you, Joel.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the West Coast, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks after you've seen My Cousin Vinny.
I can't wait. This is so fun.
All right. Thanks. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess, Sean Wynn, and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do, Brooke Bolin for spreading the good word about us, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.